Okay, we're off. So if you could say your name and where you live.
Yes, my name's Don Taggart and I'm at 58 Glen Huntley Road, Elwood. I'm in a house in which I've been in for 69 years. My family, my grandparents came in the late 1880s. They were married in Melbourne in 1888. My grandfather worked originally in an old house up in Grey Seat St Kilda, which is now a backpacker's called Eildon. He was their gardener.
So was he, when he came here, was that his trade as a gardener?
No, he was just, actually he went from Northern Ireland to New Zealand to his sister, and he hated it there. So he decided to come to Melbourne. He thought he'd make his fortune up in the goldfield, but that didn't happen. So,
do you know what he hated about New Zealand?
No, I don't, because I never knew him, of course. He died.
Yes.
No, I don't know what. I think he was a bit of a rebel.
Mm-hmm.
His father paid him to go to New Zealand to his sister, who had married and gone to New Zealand, because he was rather naughty. I don't know if she'd say this or not. He used to get girls into trouble, which in those days was, of course, a terrible thing. They used to have to go away to have their children. So I think his father got a bit sick of all that. So he thought and that may be why he didn't like New Zealand. It was too restrictive for him.
Because his sister was
on his way all the time, mm-hmm. and his brother-in-law probably. Whereas when he came here, of course, he was on his own. Another story, we can edit all this out. He got married in January 1888. And in August 1888, my father was born. So obviously my grandmother's parents must have got to him over the shop and said, "You marry my daughter or else." But anyway, they had a long and happy marriage and they had five children. Well, then after they got married, the owner of Eildon, a man by the name of Carey, who's a Western District pastoralist, died. And the house was too big for his, 30-roomed house was too big for his widow. So she sold up, and then he didn't have a job. So he'd been brought up on a farm in Northern Ireland, so he decided to open a dairy, which is, a lot of people don't know what a dairy is these days. They sell milk. And his first dairy was on the corner of Dickens and Barclay Street. Pardon me. And he was there for a couple of years, and then he came down and rented a house near the corner of Glen Huntley Road and Ormond Esplanade called Wiltonia. And he had a dairy there.
And is
that
still there?
No, the old dairy, no, it's all gone. And that would have been early 1890s, because he wasn't up at Dickens Street very long, because the guy that owned the property came from Southern Ireland and he came from Northern Ireland, and they used to fight like Billy, because my grandfather had red hair. That's where I've got mine from. I haven't got any now. But and so they fought like Billy, and in the end he couldn't stand it any longer, or my grandmother couldn't stand it, and so they decided to go to move.
And when you say they fought, was that sort of a long Protestant?
Yes, that's right. Yes, that's right. He was a very staunch Catholic, and he was, from all accounts, he was a bit eccentric as well. The story is, my father always tells the story of, when his wife died, he wouldn't pay for a funeral. He made the coffin himself, and she was buried in the Melbourne General Cemetery, and he took her up there himself in a wagon, coffin in a wagon, because he just couldn't post an undertaker, and raised the money.
So he was pretty tight.
Oh, he was, really, yes. So they set up the dairy here, and his cows used to just wander around because there's no fences or anything as such. They used to fall over. Point on was different to what it is now. It was a sheer cliff. And the cows would fall over there at night in the dark. And because they're so close, they could hear them, you know, singing out. And it would make my father, who would have been about, I suppose, 7 or 8, he'd make him get up the shotgun and the kerosene lamp and go down and see them. And if they were, you know, if the neck was broken or they were in a very bad way, he'd shoot them. And they'd just leave them there. So they even had pollution and most of that. If not, he would have to go down towards Brighton, away from the rocky area, and bring them back home.
So they'd wander that far?
Oh, yes. I wouldn't know. It's the same thing. I suppose we all do the same thing. When I was young, my father used to tell all these sorts of stories, but I never ever terribly interested when I was young. It was only when I got older that I got interested in family history and history in general.
And it's great that you've remembered as much as you have.
Oh, yes, and then when I joined my father's cerebral in hospital, when I joined the Historical Society, and then I used to question him then, but he was so sick, of course, it wasn't very easy.
So when you say so the dairy used to sell milk as well, did it?
Oh, yes. Yes, they used to deliver milk. All around, you know, far away, Brighton, Sandringham, down to Port. And in those days, you know, there's no restrictions as to selling milk.
And so they used to just have it on a cart?
Yes, they used to have the milk cart, and yes, bottles and cans. And
would people come out and just...
They used to leave it on the doorstep.
Yes.
Prior to the First World War, he moved from Wiltonia and he bought 3 small blocks of land in Wilton Grove. And he had a house built on one, he had horse yards on the other, because there were horses and carts, and he had a dairy built on the other. And he always tells, or my father always told the story about how he had his brother-in-law was a cutler, and he was very well off.
A cutler?
Yeah, sell cutlery.
Uh-huh.
And silverware in Franklin Street, Ward Brothers. And so he was very well off. They had a lovely home in Richmond, blah, blah, blah. And he approached him and he said, look, if you will lend me £100, I can buy 3 acres of land in Elwood. And so poor old Mr. Ward said, no way. He said, there is no future the other side of that flipping the swamp. He didn't say flipping. He said, there is no way. He said, if you come north of the Arrow, he said, I'll lend you £1,000. My grandfather said, no, he liked it because it was a bush and a little countryside. So that was it. Imagine what it's going to be worth today.
Absolutely. Now, the other thing I meant to say, Don, is that I nod a lot, but I don't actually, I try not to make any sounds. So
no, that's all right.
No,
that's,
if I'm going like that.
Yeah.
Normally I'd be going,
nod in and say no.
It's a bit odd that I try not to have my voice on the tape, except where I ask the questions. I've got to tell you that. But he still had his 3 blocks of land, didn't he?
Oh, yes, he bought me. He was able to afford to pay off 3 blocks of land. And so he built that. And going back a bit, when they were down at the Huntley Road and Norman Essendon Road, my father started school, and he went to Elsmere Primary School. And he used to have to walk in the winter time, because there were no roads. In the winter time, he rode a horse and tied it up to the fence at the school. And of course, the other kids used to think it was a great novelty with him with a horse. So they set up the dairy. My father worked for his uncle in a cutlery business in the city. He married my mother. Him, my mother and he were cousins, and she came from Northern Ireland. That's how we knew so much about my grandfather. And so when he came back from the First World War, he bought a block of land next to the Glen Huntly tram depot, and he had ideas of marrying my mother, because he met her. He used to go to Northern Ireland on leave from France during the war, and he had an idea that he was going to, you know, marry mother. So he bought this block of land. He went back to Ireland in 1925, and they got married. I came back here, and he decided to build a shop on the block of land, which is still there, the shop. And so mother ran it as a milk bar.
And where's the shop?
Hmm?
What address is that shop?
Oh, I don't know what the number is. It's next to the Glen Huntly tram depot.
So it's in Glen Huntly Road?
Yes, in Glen Huntly Road, and it's just up on the left-hand side over Hawthorne Road. About two blocks. But it's still there. The last time I was up there, it was still there. A Greek couple were running it as a milk bar. Anyhow, that was 25, 26. Well, when I was born in 29, and Mum found it very difficult with a small baby running the shop, of course. So an aunt, one of her sister-in-laws, went up there and was helping her. And then the depression came. Well, the tram drivers didn't have money to be buying, you know, lunches and all that sort of stuff. So business got very grim. So they decided they would close the shop. They didn't sell it, they closed it. And they went to live over the road. And they were there for a short while. And then my father got out of work. More brothers went there in the business and had to let him go. And so he was out of work too. And so my grandfather said to him, well, you better come down and take on a round, you know, with a dairy. So that's he came to the infos. Well, when he found a far too, he used to have to ride his bike from Caulfield down here to Wilton Grove, 1 o'clock in the morning, to go out delivering milk. Because they used to deliver it very early in the morning in those days. So that's what happened. And we were in Spray Street for 12 months, and then we came here in 36. Excuse me, I'm going to have a good drink of water.
Sure.
Mario.
Okay.
So in 1935, I started school over at the Elwood, what's now called the Elwood Primary. In those days, they were central schools because there were no government colleges as such, there were only private colleges. So they went to Form 2, or the equivalent of Form 2, which I, I can't say what I was going to say now. I did not.
you can say that.
Go on,
say it louder.
Oh, no, I don't really know.
No, he loved it.
I hated school. I had every minute of it.
I heard who said.
Now, I've said it. I really did. I learnt more after I left school than I ever did at school, I would say.
What was it about it?
I don't know, I'm sure. I think probably because I was always a bit of a rabble, because I had red hair and I had a temper and went with it. I think it was the discipline.
And it didn't suit you?
No. And you see, I I was 14 when my younger brother was born. There's only the two of us. So you see, I was brought up really like an only child. And so I was spoiled, I guess. was there, and then when I was just on 14, my father got a hernia in those days. That was very serious. He had to be off for weeks.
So he was still delivering milk?
Yeah, he was delivering, handling heavy crates of milk and stuff. So it was decided that I would leave school for 12 months and then go back. And so I went on milk cart. My aunt, I went to an aunt of mine, this really sounds funny, but she was a real character. She used to drive the horse and cart, and I used to run in and out delivering the milk. So then it went on for 12 months. My father came back from being in hospital, and I said, I'm not going to go back to school. So they said, well, you'll have to. I said, well, I'm not going back to school. So they were out one day.
So how old were you?
I would have been just on nearly 15 by then. So they went out for lunch somewhere with mum's friends one day. So I took my school bag and my books and my school jumper up the yard, poured kerosene all over them and burnt them. Well, you know what was let loose. But anyway, so I said, oh, no, I'm not going back to school. That's it. My father was a very passive man, he never ever, and he said, well, Don, I don't know what you're going to do. He said, you'll have to go wherever the government could see the war was on. That's the other thing to explain. And he said, you're going to have to go wherever the government decides you're going to go. And I said, well, I don't know about that. So he said, well, you will. So eventually I had to go for an interview up to St Kilda Town Hall. And eventually they said, well, we've decided that you are best suited to go up the country and pick fruit. So we're going to send you to Mercura to pick fruit. So I said, I didn't say it to them. I came and said, well, I'm not going to Mildura and I'm not going to pick fruit. So my father said, well, you just got to, and there's nothing you can do about it. So the people next door, she's a dear, the old grandma that's next door, she's a dear old lady. And she said, well, Don, she said, the only way to get out of it is you see your doctor and get a certificate. So I was very friendly with the local doctor around the corner, and I said, oh, that'll be all. So I went around to him, and I saw Dr. Foster, and he said, well, what's wrong? And I said, well, there's nothing actually wrong. And I said, what I need is a certificate to say that I can't go to pick fruit. And he said, he thought, and he said, well, Don, if you don't want to pick fruit, you don't have to pick fruit. So he gave me a certificate. So then the problem was, what I was going to do? I had to go to work. So my father happened to be a member of Freemasonry, and one of the guys he knew there was the personnel officer at Myers in the city. And so he said, look, you know, we're short of staff, we're short of male staff particularly. He said, look, there'll be no problem, send him in to me. So I went in there, and I don't know, for some reason or other, it just seemed to, the idea of it all seemed to appeal to me. So I started in Myra, in the Charm and Grass Department, and I was there, and then I went to Southampton from New Haven. So I was there for 47 years. All up.
So that really worked for you? That was the right...
Yeah, I don't know what it was. It was just something. It's just the whole idea, and he took me down to the department I was going to work in, and it just all appealed to me. And this is, you know, one of those things, strangely.
Well, that was a happy outcome, wasn't it?
I loved it. I really did. For someone, you know, with very little education, it was really something. Yes.
And so, when did you move here?
1936.
So
we're at 1935. We're at Strait Street. The house is still there to 1991. But we're only there 12 months when this came up for sale. And, just the things that appealed to Mum. It was a terrible place then. Very run down. And so we came here, and I've been here ever since.
And your brother is here too?
Yes, he does now. He was married for 30 years, but he's divorced. And so he lives here now too. Which is just the world when I'm the way I am. It's turned out pretty well too.
Mm.
We don't really get on. We tolerate one another, but I'm very lucky to have him though now. Because I have these funny, you know, turns. I'm not terribly well with one. I won't delve on that.
So you still got friends that you went to school with?
Yeah, I've got one. Only one left. Still see him regularly. We talk on the phone.
Is that Max?
Yes. Yeah. Max Nicholas. Of course you would know him through the Historical Society. Yes, well, Max was spoke to him yesterday, actually. Yes.
And are there people that were at the school when you were there still around
him? No, I don't know anyone now. He's the last one. The two or three that I did know that were around have no longer with us.
So when you were growing up, was there a gang of kids?
Oh yes, there was a gang of kids. We all played together. Used to go out and play in the canal and push one another in and all that sort of thing. Go yabbying.
So there were yabbies in the canal?
Yeah, there were yabbies in the canal. We used to go and catch yabbies.
And did you eat them?
I didn't. A lot of them did, though. No, they didn't appeal to me.
And just sort of going back to the dairy, how long did your father...
He died in... No, 1950. The year the Queen was crowned was 53. They decided to sell it because they were all getting, you know, too old for that sort of thing. And there was a big dairy over in Tennyson Street, Hamilton's, and they sort of in such a big way that, you know, they were struggling. So they decided, they said that I've got two male cousins. If either of them or I were willing to take it on, they would stay on, you know, keep it going. And it wasn't my cup of tea, that was for sure. And so they decided to sell it. So they sold it the same year that the Queen was crowned, 53.
And so did they run cows until...
No.
So when did they stop having cows?
That would have been about just prior to the First World War. And they used to get... The milk was then brought down from Wandon in the country.
And so they had cows...
Oh, yes.
On the paddocks around right up until then.
Yes, when my father and my uncle and my grandfather all decided to enlist and go to the First World War, well, my grandfather was only in the Black Reserves, they called him there, they had another name for him, which were way behind the scenes because he's an older man. And they thought it wasn't the right place for my two aunts and my grandmother were to live down here on their own. It was pretty wild and went. So they went to live in Hawthorne and then they came back and started up the dairy again after the war. My grandfather wasn't away very long at the war, but my father was until the end of 1919, he was chosen after the war, when the war had finished, he was chosen to go to England to help discharge Australian servicemen. He won a DCM.
What's that?
Distinguished Conduct Medal for increase in supposed bravery.
Was he brave?
Oh yes, he was a very quiet man, but very and he had less education than I did, really, because he was he wrote beautifully, but he left school when he was, I think he was 12, because he had help down the dairy. He got up in the morning, he helped my grandfather milk the cows, and my grandmother used to help deliver the milk. Take his two girls with her. And then he'd go to school and he'd come home at night and he'd help to milk the cows again, do his homework and other chores around about.
So what time did they deliver the milk then?
Oh, very early in the morning, yeah, always till 1 or 2 o'clock. They'd get up and out they'd go.
And then would they come home and go to bed after that?
Oh yes, no, not always.
No,
they wouldn't do that till night time, but they'd get some sleep during the day. So there were three boys. My father was the eldest of them all. Three boys and two girls. So they always had to work.
So who owned the land to be able to run the cows, or was it just...
Oh, in those days it was just Crown land. For many years, up until... I think it must have been the end of the Second World War. No one even paid rates of taxes. You know, there were some very wealthy people who lived along the Esplanade. A very prominent barrister and solicitor, his name escapes me. Reverend Docker, he had Elwood House down Docker Street. He owned half of Richmond. And none of them ever paid rates of taxes. They had these lovely mansions because no one wanted Elwood. Brighton didn't want to own it, St Kilda didn't want to own it.
Is that right?
Yeah, because it was just, you know, birds and bush, it was nothing.
But it was beautiful enough for very rich people.
Oh, yes, because it was beautiful along the Esplanade. It was a choice part. And the swamp started sort of here. So they were, you know, they had the prime. Well, that was the prime land in those days.
And was there much mixing between people? Was there, you know, did the rich people have anything to do with the poor people?
Oh, yes, to a degree.
I should say, you know, the rich
people. Yes, that's right, yes, no, I know what you mean. Can't think of his name anyway, it doesn't matter. He owned a beautiful house. Still there, called Tyuna and Tyuna Grove, and they used to have dances for all the young, few young people that were around. My father used to go to those, you know, he was just a dear, and he, Dygan was his name, and he, my father thought he'd go and work for the State Savings Bank. And it was Dygan he didn't get the job, but Dygan gave him a most wonderful reference, which we still have. So they did mix, yes.
Used to have dances for young people?
Yes.
So that they could
mix and get together and socialise. She had a big family too. And to a degree. There were some who didn't, of course, I don't think, but... And during the war we used to have they're now talking about it, and it's nothing new, really, identity cards.
Oh.
That was my mother's identity card, and that was mine.
Yeah.
That was so, because if you're an alien, if you didn't have one of those, you could be locked up. Or, you know, you could be an alien, they want to know who was who.
Yeah.
So you had to carry that at all times.
And this is 105 things,
The numbers, the numbers were changed. The numbers started at Point Ormond and they changed to the Elston station. They started again and then they started again at, I think it was Hawthorne Road. it's quite later on, prior to the Second World War. They decided that was rather ridiculous.
Yeah.
So which was.
Yeah.
So they converted it around. So it starts at one and goes to 1,000 and something now.
Yeah. And these little blue envelopes, the original,
yes, they are original. I don't know, those are all different colours. That was mine. But they're issued by the council.
And did you have to go down there and...
Initially you had to go down there and register.
And present some proof of identity.
Yes, that's right. And you had to have them on you all the time.
And what date was it issued?
I don't know, I couldn't read it. I meant to get a magnifying glass. I think mine is 45.
Mm-hmm.
But I can't say.
I think this one says 42.
Oh, it might be because it's issued.
Well, it says 43.
The 43 is that I couldn't see. Mm.
And so, did you conscientiously carry this with
you? Oh, yes, or if you had to, because you could get pulled up, you know.
And did that ever happen? Did people ever ask you for your card?
Oh, yes, I got asked to. See, I started in Mars at the end of 44, end of 44, at Christmas. And, you used to get pulled up. They used to ask you, you know, think you're an alien, and. So we work in Myers, and of course, those days things were very different to what they are now.
What was different about it?
Well, the systems, mainly. They didn't have cash registers like they do today. They had a form of a tube, what they called a tube, and you put the money in the docket and in a little carrier and twist it around, you put it in, and it shot up to the office, and they gave you the change, and it got shot back again. And prior to that, you used to pull a handle. That was in my day, though. So there was a shop up in Elsinore had it until not long ago. It happens. So they had that same system, but.
And did you socialise in Elwood?
No, not really. No, not really. I was mad keen on movies. I was always, we had a picture theatre around here, and I used to go to, they used to change their shows twice a week, and I used to go twice a week, even when I was going to school. My mother used to say to me, I used to say, no, I don't want to go to the pictures. Mother said, you've been twice this week, and not going anymore. So I used to say, oh, well, I go down and ask Auntie Dorothy, they were down in Wilton Grove, and I go down there, so she'd give them the money to go to the pictures, which didn't go down too well with Mother.
And did you go with friends or?
Oh, sometimes, yes. Max and I used to go around here, and a couple of girls. One just recently died, Esme Brown, who I was rather keen on at one stage. Used to carry her books home from school.
And so she stayed around Elwood?
Yeah, she stayed around Elwood until she was in her late teens. She lived down Madison Street.
And what was your favourite film?
Oh, I don't know. I think Gone with the Wind. I've seen it 38 times.
Have you?
Every time it gets screened, I go to see it at least once.
So you'll always go to the movies to see it? You don't want to see it on the small screen?
No, I've got it on video. But, it's all right. But, it's nothing like the big screen.
So do you still go to the movies?
Not as much, no. I'm on third. All I can say is I'm on 13 tablets a day. So you know, I've got an emphysema and. So I don't get out much, a lot. Can't walk much. But.
So when did you retire, Don?
1999.
Oh, okay. So that's not that long ago.
No, it's not that long ago, no. No, it's not that long ago. They didn't want me to retire then either.
And so were you working at Southland when you retired?
Yes. When I opened Southland, they asked me to go down there. The guy that was in charge down there asked me if I'd go down there and organise their stock control in China and glass. So I said, yes, I'd go. And it was a bit of a job getting there and back, transport-wise. But anyway, I said, when did I go there? I was overseas in the 60s, must have been about 1970, 71. They had just already opened.
Yeah.
But I went overseas in 1966. I went over to thinking that it would be a good idea to learn a bit more about, you know, the retail trade, but it didn't work out that way.
That was a business.
Yeah, well, it was. It was initially going to be a holiday, but I finished up there. I was there 3.5 years, and I worked in Harrods, which is a big department store in London, which was an entirely different experience to Myers.
In what way?
Oh well, of course it was very upmarket. You know, the Queen. I served the Queen ones.
Did you behave yourself?
Oh, yes, she was all right. Yes, my word. But they would close the store when she came, and they'd ask you. You didn't get paid the extra for it, but it would be at night, so 6 o'clock. And they'd ask the volunteers to stay behind in each department, you know, just one person in case she wanted something, which she sometimes did. And most of them, the English, didn't want to stay because, you know, they weren't getting anything for it. And so I said, oh, yes, I'll stay, you know, great novelty. And she used to come in about 3 times or 4 times a year. And she'd walk through, and one time, or twice, they came up to me and they said, oh, Her Majesty wants to inquire about. Well, one time it was about crystal candelabra, water candelabra. And she wanted two. She was coming to give them to de Gaulle. He was coming on a state visit. She didn't want one, she wanted two. And so I said, well, Mum, I'll have to go out and have a look in our reserves, see if we've got another one. So off I go, marching out, and all of a sudden there's a guy beside me. Security. Well, I hadn't noticed him, but apparently he was one of his security guys. So I thought I might go out and get a gun and come back, you know, and shoot them all. And then we were out there, and there was another one that was very dusty, and I went to go to the drawer to get a duster, and he said, what are you doing? And I said, it's all right. I said, I need to get a duster before I can show it to Her Majesty. So we dusted it. So she said she'd take them. And that was very interesting too. Her account was in a black box, but the managing director was the only one who ever saw it. No one else ever saw it.
So we don't know if she paid the full price.
No, we wouldn't have got it for nothing at all.
But a royal discount.
But she was charming. One time she said to me, oh, you come from Australia, do you? And I said, yes, Mum, that's right. And she said, oh, lovely country. She probably told it. Said that to everybody. And she said, oh, what part? And I said, oh, I come from Melbourne. And she said, oh, yes, she said, it's a lovely city. She said, you have the most lovely harbour. She said, that's where I arrived. And I said, oh my God, she's made of blue. Do I say anything or don't I? So I thought, oh well, you know, I'll never see her again. So I said, well, actually, Mum, I said, that was Sydney. I said, it's the city that has the most beautiful harbour. I said, we have some lovely gardens. She said, oh, of course, she said. And then there were others, of course. Princess Margaret used to come in. She was quite pleasant. Prince Charles was only a child, of course. And at Christmas, I used to, because I didn't mind what I did, and of course the thing was sort of, you know, was very saturated where they went. So at Christmas, when I was there, they used to ask me would I go up to the toy department for the lovely little kids.
Lucky you.
Yeah. And Prince Charles used to come in. Well, then, he's probably very different now, but he used to, you know, he was very obnoxious young man. He'd say, wind that up. I want to see that going.
Mm.
Not beg your pardon or anything. Now he's thinking, this is my God, lobster.
Treated everybody like
they were serving. Yes, that's right. Yes, he was. But he was young. He was done very young.
Yes. So let's come back to Australia again.
Mm-hmm.
And what was it like when they started building the school? What was across the road before
Nothing.
They built the school?
Nothing. It was a big empty paddock. We used to go over there and play.
And what kinds of games did you play?
Oh, you know, cowboys and Indians and, you know, all that sort of thing, gangsters, shoot one another up. And it had long, what we called aniseed grass, which smells aniseed, that's why, you know. And I come home and my mother said, you've been over there again, what have you been up to over there?
She didn't like you being over there.
No, I don't think so. Well, I think she was a bit, you know, doubtful as to what we were doing, whether we had a girlfriend over there or what, which a lot of the boys did, of course. Underneath the canal bridge up here is the favourite place for them to go.
So was it a bit of a lover's lane? Yeah,
it's up there. Yeah, yeah. Terrible dirty place, but that's where they used to go. And we used to have, during the war, they had air raid precautions and you know, single target bomb shelters, air raid shelters. And I'd sound sirens, and we used to go to the park just near the canal, which had trenches in it, and from the primary school, we were all herded over there into trenches until we were all clear. Went down at St. Columbus, they went down to the beach, the foreshore.
And so they were practiced?
Yeah, practiced. Oh, yes. Oh, yes, we had them all the time. You know, you'd have them in the middle of the night and you had to go up. They had trenches over there. They used to, Frank Arnold next door, he was the head of the air raid wardens here in Melbourne. And so they, because I was little and skinny and that, they used to use me for, as a victim, an air raid victim, for the ambulance people to practice on, you know. He'd say, Don, come on, we're going to have an air raid in a minute. And he'd go out and he'd say, well, here, lie down there on the footpath, or lie on the road, you know. And they'd all come down and they'd put my arm in a sling or tie my head up. And then they'd carry me on a stretcher over to the trenches over there. That was great fun.
So he was the head of the
Yeah, Ellard.
And did he live there for a long time?
Oh, yes, he lived there until he died. Mm. Yes. So that was all great fun.
Yeah.
And we had to have blackout curtains. So the black mother made them by hand. She'd never used the sewing machine. And also we had strips of paper on the windows. So if they blasted, it wouldn't shatter all over the place.
And what kind of paper was it?
Oh, it was thick brown paper.
And so was that up all the time?
Yes, it was most of the time.
So it would have been quite dark?
Oh, it could be, yes. It's only thick, you know, across.
Oh,
like
okay.
That, you know.
Yes. So like a
BS. Oh, yes, you could see out.
Yes.
No, and then you had the blackout curtains on either side, and when the siren went, you had to pull them across. And you weren't allowed to have little nits. They'd come and knock on the door, and they'd say, you've got a light going.
Mm-hmm.
You can see that, that's like a beacon up in the sky.
Yeah. And so was it scary? Did you ever think that they
would
No,
not really. Never ever. We never thought about it. And it wasn't so much in those days publicity like it is now about things. I don't think the media, well, the radio wasn't, you know, they didn't sort of play things up like they do now.
And was that, do you think that you didn't realise how serious it was?
No, I don't think so. I think a lot of people didn't realise that it was just going to be that serious. They never ever thought they would come this far. It wasn't until the submarines got into Sydney, which I can't remember what year that was. And then we sort of started thinking about, you know, they had gun placements down at the heads, and after that, they worried. But no. I think, of course, the kids didn't worry. And of course, we had rationing. You know, you had coupons, little books of coupons for clothes, and my mother and father, my father's a diabetic, so he couldn't eat sweets, and mother didn't eat sweets, so I had all their rations of sweets as well, so I had a lovely time, really. I didn't go with her much at all.
And you mentioned playing across the road and the canal. Was the beach a playground for you as well?
Oh, yeah, times. Although I didn't go down there that much because I was so fair. I got sunburned so easily, so I couldn't go. And I think that's why I developed such a phobia about the movies, because I used to have some terrible sunburns. So I was just so terribly fair. Mm.
So did that mean that you missed out playing with other kids?
No, not really.
So you had a little gang there?
Yes, we'd play around here, you know, we're at school, and we're after school. It was just I never went to the beach. That was all. That was the only difference.
So Elwood for you was the canal.
That's right. You'd go down and walk there, you know, at night, at dusk. Because in those days, you know, it was very different. You didn't worry too much, even when you were very young, you didn't think about, you know, whether you're going to get attacked or, you know, whatever. Even the girls in those days didn't really, it was very different.
And was there a carnival on the beach?
Yes, there was, and over here the Easter circus used to come each year.
Can you tell me about that?
Oh yes, they used to come, and I used to wag from school, go over to see the animals, and well, they went on for 2 or 3 years, and then my father was very keen on animals too. He loved horses, and one day he was over there, and so I got sprung.
So he wagged work.
Oh no, well he wouldn't be, you know, in the daytime after he'd been at done his dairy duty. Because he could come home and he'd lie down and go to sleep. And in an hour or half an hour he'd wake up and he'd be his right
butt. And that would be the way he would manage.
That's how he managed.
Yes.
That's the way he coped.
Yes. So what happened when you got sprung?
Oh, yeah, I got carted back to school. Because I got into trouble in school too, didn't I? I was kept in, and I don't know, I got so many lines to write and all that sort of thing.
And when did the carnival come? To
Elwood,
whereabouts was it?
Oh, the circus was over there, and then they had a carnival down. Near the community centre that is now on the beach.
Wait. Who used to come into that?
Rawley's man, he was a chemist.
Mm-hmm.
And my father used to buy a thing called Gamble's ointment. It's like Savon or those things. But they had a most foul smell. And originally it was used on horses. They used to massage them when their legs went on them. but it was good for any of those muscular things.
Was it like Dr. Sars or
yeah, something like that, but it had much holding smell. So he was a great believer in Gamble's ointment. And a man came selling rabbits, had them hanging on the car. And my mother and I couldn't stand rabbits because they used to remind us, now I probably caught it off her, of dead cats.
Oh.
She'd cook it, you know, the carcass, just sort of she used to say they'd look like dead cats hanging up.
And would there be a lot of dead cats around?
Oh, there? No, not really. It's just her. But my father loved him, so she used to have to cook him a rabbit every now and again.
So he came around in a van?
Yeah, he came around in a horse and cart. And they were all hanging around the cart.
And do you know where he caught them?
No, I don't know. No. Ice man used to come before he had refrigerators. Ice used to sit around the corner there. The ice chest, and he always had a block of ice set aside, and all the kids used to go out and he'd chip a bit off, you know, give you a hunk of ice, and it was so cold you could hardly hold it, and put it in your mouth, and it was so cold, and but he was a favourite. All the kids would be running out to see the ice man.
So could you tell me about how people used to deliver the food? Do you mind repeating that part?
No, not at all. You'd go down to the grocer and put it in the order. And he'd come up and later on it's a van, but he'd have a horse and cart too. And he'd deliver it. Another would pay him at the door and he'd bring it in and put it down the kitchen table for you. And of course everything was so very different to what it is now. Like you go down and you'd want a pound of butter and he'd have a great big hunk of butter like that and he'd just gauge off what he thought it was and he'd say, oh, well, it's a bit more, it's a bit less or whatever, and you'd say, oh, that's okay. The same with the cheese.
And so was that in Norman Road?
Yeah, that was down in Grantley Road. No, they had them down the other end of Norman Road too. You had ham beef shop. They just sold cup I think you wanted.
Very quick.
No, yeah. Okay. Yep. Go for it. There's some more out there. The ham and beef shop is sold, you know, cold meats and sausages. You know, you cook sausages and it used to sell butter and cheese too.
Yes.
But a haberdashery would sell needles and cottons and threads and ladies' underwear and stockings. We had two of those down here.
And so did you used to go and you used to run the orders for your mother down
there? Oh, yes, yes. She'd send me down to with the order, you know, write out a list.
Did your family ever go fishing?
No, none of us were fishermen. No.
And did you have friends that were fishermen?
No, not really. No. Not that I can remember. None of my school friends were fishy people. I'll just get some more. I think there's some more out there.
I'm going to play you used to have a tin with a wet bit of rag and that's how you'd pick it.
So it's like a mini blackboard.
Yes, that's right. It's picked that and they were made of slate.
Oh, okay. I had no idea. That's the whole...
And then I had a pencil which was slate too.
Mm.
You used to have to draw lines across, and you have, you know, I don't know how they teach them now, but you know, capital A and a small A, and you'd be writing all those. And,
mm. And is that where you do your lines as well?
Yes, that's right, yes. And they were various sizes, so some were much bigger than that.
Yeah, yeah. And when did you get interested in the Historical Society?
In 1970. Three.
Oh, okay. That long ago.
Mm.
And what attracted you to it?
Well, I saw an ant. I started to get interested in more family history, really. And then I saw it advertised in the paper, a meeting at the town hall, and I went. And the young chap, Graham Braden was his name, he was the president. And in 1975, at the AGM, he came up and said, "Oh, by the way, Don," he said, "it's the election today for the office bearers, and we had a committee meeting last night, and it was decided that you're going to be the new president." And I said, "No!" I said, "I've never done anything like that, so I couldn't possibly do it. Wouldn't know where to start." And he said, "Well, I'm sorry, it's all arranged." Oh, gosh.
So how long were you the president for?
25 years. 75 to 2000.
Oh, that was a huge
25 years.
Commitment then.
No one else wanted it, that's why.
And has it always been as active as what it is now?
No, not really, no. We had a lot more members, but they were all sort of elderly. So there'd be about 30 or 40 members when I was president, but oh no, the best thing that happened to it was when Mayo turned up, because he's wonderful. Oh.
Enormous energy he's got, hasn't he?
Oh, yes. And what amazed me is his knowledge. And it's all up here. And he's on a walk. Have you been on his walk? You know, no notes, no nothing. I used to have dreams and notes, you know, on little cards. When I did, I used to do walks of Elwood. But, you know, he's got it all up here.
Mm.
Mm. Well, actually, what does he do? I've never ever liked to ask him.
I think he's a social worker.
Oh, right.
I think he works for a disability organisation. I think he works part-time.
Uh-huh. First book. But these aren't originals. They, the Victorian government reproduced them. Now go on, have another tray. Eat up.
Eat up. Thank you.
No way for the art.
How's that? So is that the book, the kind of book, did you learn from those books, John?
Yeah.
Is that from your...
No, they're... Time? I never kept mine.
Mm-hmm.
The government, the Victorian government once, the education department rather, reproduced the pattern.
What do you think about that, Leo? Come
on. Try not to make a mess, because.
And we used to have school papers. You used to have to buy, and each grade had their own type of school paper.
Like a,
I don't know. Yes, it was all to do with geography. See if I can find it. I've got a couple of those. They're not original either.
Try not to look at what I'm doing.
Okay.
Explorers and...
Yes. So it turns out that you've got more of an interest in the business, the teachings of school in your adulthood than you do when you're...
Oh, yes. Yes, wish you could go back.
Mm. Do you feel like you missed out because...
No, not really.
Like school?
Mm. Not really. I wish I'd taken advantage of things more.
In what kind of way?
Oh, generally, I'd like to have been, you know, I'd like to have had a good education.
And what good of the education would you have liked to have got?
Well, I always had it, not that I know much about it, but I always sort of fancied law. I don't know why, but... And of course in my day they didn't do it, but, you know, anything to do with the arts, like music. I'd love to learn the piano. I'd love to. But my parents always said it's only sissies who learnt the piano. So,
well, I
trot them out and read through them occasionally myself still.
Mm-hmm.
In my second childhood.
Was very much, you know, about the business of learning enough so that you could get a job, wasn't it?
And I think education now is so much better for children, the way they do it, the system. There's things for and against, I know, but I think there are a lot that's for us.
Certainly a kinder system.
Yes, that's what I mean. It's not the terrible discipline that there was in those days.
Mm. Mm. So were there some real
scallywags? Oh, yeah. Mm. No, there were some who were always in trouble.
And did they stay in trouble even when they were in their adult life, or did they come good
once they were? One boy, I only knew one who didn't. His name was Johnny Cox. Oh, I don't know where he is. Or he mightn't be with us anymore if he'd be my age. But even, you know, 20 years ago, I heard he was in jail. But if anyone wanted a pencil or a ruler or whatever, he'd say, oh, come with me. And we'd go up to Coles and Elsenwick. And he'd say, just wait out here. And he'd come out with a handful. He was just born. He was just boy. He was born with that in him.
And did he come from a family of?
I never met his father, but I met his mother, and she was very nice, and they had a nice home. Over in Minted Street, not far from school. But oh, he was a villain, a terror.
Mm. So has there always, you know, St Kilda's got a bad reputation for a while.
Mm.
It didn't ever really affect Elwood, even though it was so close.
No, we were very lucky. And we saw it's sort of, I know it sounds as though I'm being classy, and I'm not. But it's not really quite as sleazy as St Kilda, and it's not as... high class is Brighton.
Hoity-toity.
Mm, yeah. That's the word.
And do you think St Kilda's still sleazy?
Oh, it's compared to what it was. But I think it's still, you know, there are certain places you really don't want to go.
Mm, still got a grubby underbelly.
Mm.
And is there any sleaziness about Elwood?
No, not really. Off Mitchell Street, a couple of streets there, a bit. But, I might be prejudiced.
And were there any notorious characters?
No, not in my, not necessarily in my time, but one notorious gangster who was murdered in the end lived, well, he lived in a lot of places, but he lived on the other corner of Spray Street, just across sort of a road. Squizzy Taylor, you might have heard of him. Well, he lived there for quite a while, but he kept shifting around, he had to.
So how long was he there for?
I was there for about 2 years.
And did people know that he was a gangster?
Oh, yes. And he had a tunnel. They didn't, it was undiscovered when it was sold. 15 years ago or so. He had a tunnel that apparently went all the way to the canal, underground tunnel, but it's all been, you know, it's all caved in. But the entrance was still up there in the basement of the house. A big iron door on it.
Was that so he could make it quicker?
Yeah, so he could get it away if the police came.
Or his rivals. Possibly
too.
Yeah.
Look, my father said he was in love with his brother.
So your dad knew him?
No, he used to come. He then went, from there apparently he went down opposite Wilton Grove, which is just past St. Columbus, the Catholic Church. And in Glen Huntly Road, opposite Wilton Grove, the flats there and there, but a little old house there. Well, he was in there for a long while, and he used to come up to the dairy and buy the milk. And they all knew who he was.
Somebody was murdered in the end, was he?
He was shot in Fitzroy.
By...
Gangland, yeah. He's buried down in Brighton.
Mm-hmm.